Just on that note, apparently someone was urinating or taking outside of our office this week, Ewan, so it's not too different from...
What? I mean, I can't confirm or deny these allegations.
On that note.
I don't know.
Welcome to the Pressed Up Podcast, Pressed Up Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, Ewan, joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Shannon.
Hello.
James.
Hello.
And Brody.
Hello.
This week on the show, we're going to be discussing Doom, the Dark Ages, Capcom's Fighting Collection 2, the Super Mario World, there's the title there actually, the new Super Mario movie title. Spoilers. Supposedly leaking. I linked it myself. Square Enix and Capcom's business strategies, and maybe one or two other things as well. But first, Brody, welcome back. You're not long back from LA, having been flown over to check out Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4. I'll get to the game in the moment, but firstly, how was the trip? How was LA?
Expensive as ever. I didn't really get ahead and do much because every Uber in any direction about 15-20 minutes was about 70 Australian dollars. So
Jesus.
Didn't really go out and see too much, but I was fairly jet lagged for a lot of the time. So did a little bit of exploring and almost got accosted in the streets by some angry gentleman while we were walking out for dinner. But it was pretty good. It was nice to meet some other people in, I guess, the writing industry, tangential to gaming and stuff. They're not necessarily game sites, the people I sort of interacted with, but they're all lovely the same.
Nice. That seems like an authentic LA experience based on what I've heard. I've never really ventured far from the hotel.
Some guy circled the block. He circled the block in his car to come back and yell at us and get out of his car and threaten us. So that was lovely.
Just on that note, apparently someone was urinating or taking a shit outside of our office this week, Ewan, so it's not too different from...
What? I mean, I can't confirm or deny these allegations.
On that note.
I don't know. I wasn't listening, but I could just imagine what Brody was talking about in America.
He had to work it in somewhere.
Was it one of our
crazy
colleagues?
Man. Probably. That wouldn't surprise me either.
All right, let's maybe unpack that and dig into that a little bit deeper after the show.
At the end of the show.
But first, Brody, let's hear about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4. Now, you got to go hands-on with the game, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Go on, sir.
No, what did you make of the game? Tell us.
If you've played Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 plus 2, like, you'll probably know roughly what you're expecting. It's a very similar package to that, obviously, albeit it's the third and fourth games in the series, which I particularly have a big fondness for. Like, I think I'm most nostalgic for probably the third game. Like, I had played, like, the second one on and off at a cousin's house and stuff like that, but the third was the first one that I got myself. So yeah, like, I mean, it's pretty much what you'd expect there. It's all those maps again on, like, a, you know, the new coat of paint and all that sort of stuff. Streamlined objectives. They've redone skitching in the fourth one in particular, which, if you are uninitiated, that's skateboard hitching on the back of a car and stuff like that. So, like, Bart Simpson's in the start of the, you know, the opening credits, like, where he's hanging onto the car. That's skitching, just for the reference. I guess the biggest talking point among the THPS community would be around the fact that number 4 has had a pretty significant change in its structure, because that was the first game originally that sort of went quasi-open world. Like, you'd be put into these open zones like College and San Francisco and stuff like that, and you could just roam around freely and then individually, like, pursue these objectives, which would have their own individual timers, in the interest of, like, consistency and more coherency in the product. They decided to rework all of the Tony Hawk 4 levels and put them under the same, you know, 2-minute window timer, try and do all the objectives in the window sort of thing. So it's really changed how the fourth game feels, like, in a very big way. I think it's fine. Like, they've changed some objectives. Obviously, some didn't make the cut because they've gone, you know, down to the 10 objectives per level thing, as is standard. And, like, any concerns I may have had over, like, the maps being a little too big for a 2-minute format were put to rest pretty quickly. Like, there's a lot of, like, good shortcuts to get around the bigger levels, like Alcatraz and stuff like that. Right. And for people who would have an issue with, I guess, them having changed that anyway, they've put a lot of cool stuff into like the accessibility menus so that you can change it to sort of emulate that situation. Like you can change the 2-minute timer out to as much as an hour. So you can still go around for an hour. And while you don't, you know, talk to NPC skaters and stuff like that to get the objectives, like you can still tackle the objectives in any order you like. I think it's a bit leaner, like it trims the fat in that sense, because it was novel, I guess, in 2004 or whatever it was to, you know, go up and hear a skater read lines that sound like he recorded them in a cupboard and stuff like that. But these days, I feel like that kind of would feel a little bit, I guess, awkward and a bit naff. So I think it's a good decision to trim it down and, I guess, bring it to the same standard as the first three games have been remade to. But all in all, like, yeah, a lot of nostalgia for me personally. The game still feels great. Like, they haven't tinkered with the feel at all. Like, it feels as good as it did when Vicarious Visions did it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so I'm pretty keen to get my hands on it again in another 2 months.
It sounds as if they've kind of, like, nailed the... it plays like how I remember it sort of playing, which I guess is very much the brief of this or style of thing.
That's what, when I spoke to the developer I spoke to, like, he said that's one thing they were told from the get-go is like, don't touch how it feels. Like, don't fiddle with the gameplay, because Vicarious Visions basically nailed the Tony Hawk feel with that first remake. So their focus was largely on the levels and making them work under the new format and stuff like that. And I think they've done a very good job.
Nice one. Shannon, James, do either of you have any interest in Tony Hawk? I'm not sure I can pick either one of you as being like a skater game sort of guy.
We're not skater boys, I don't think.
We'll see you later, boys.
Nah. I feel like I played them back in the day, but nah. Not anymore.
I definitely not these days.
I think I must have like dabbled in it at a friend's house, but otherwise my skating was pretty limited to Spyro Year of the Dragon. Which probably doesn't surprise
anybody. Can I ask, like, I feel like everybody is always going on about 2 and Underground. Is there much reverence for 3 and 4? Like, as people who have played them, like, is this...
I don't know. Like, I think so. Like, I think there is at least some level of reverence within, like I said, the THPS community primarily. 1 and 2 are definitely, like, the classics that are held up there, like, the standard, but... I think 3 and 4 are definitely revered, and Underground to a degree, like, that has its audience as well. And while them doing what they've done with 4 kind of would, you would think, dampen the hopes of getting Underground and Underground 2 remakes, but I think Tony Hawk even said in an interview this week, like the past week, that as long as he's breathing, he'll try and get them remade. So that is encouraging. But
I'm sure he gets a cut of that paycheck. So I'm sure he would.
He's like, I'll make these remake happen, but I don't think the series really jumped the shark in any great way until, like, say, maybe American Wasteland or Project 8 or something like that. And then that's when they sort of...
I think Tony Hawk Ride with the skateboard was
Ride definitely was
up there.
Shred, the other one, I think it's called.
The next one,
But and then 5 was... We don't talk about Tony Hawk Pro Skater 5.
That was, like, awful. That was hideous.
Abhorrent.
I think if he can get Bam back, he can do anything, right?
That's right. Like, that's right. If he can get Bam back on the wagon, he
like is... 2 months before launch, like, he can get him back in the game. Like, surely there's a lot of pull there.
Yeah.
So, did you get to meet him whilst you were in LA? Did you encounter him? Was he at the event?
He was, yeah. So on the first day we played the game, and then the second day, night, we are all met at the El Rey Theater, which is one of the locations from, like, the San Francisco map, and it was all done up out the front to look like it did in the game. And it was kind of like a mixer sort of thing, but it was also like a gig, basically. Like, that's the venue's primary function. It's like a gig venue, and, like, there was bands from the game.
Sick.
Lupe Fiasco, who very much surprised me. Like, I was like, oh, I'm not really a Lupe fan, but then I was like, oh, he's on this. Oh, he's on this song. Oh, he's on this song. That was very good. And so probably, I guess, an hour into it or so, like, Tony was just, like, wandering the floor and taking photos with people who wanted him and stuff like that. And I did the fanboy thing and went up and asked for a photo and got a photo with Tony the Tiger as well, which was cool because they're doing the Frosties crossover, because it just makes sense. Bam was there as well. There was also a lot of, like, other skaters who I feel like would have just blended in with the crowd, because I guess Tony is the one. Like, someone made a good point while we were there. Like, I can't think of a single industry or field in any profession where like one person is like the iconic person in that profession, like Tony Hawk is with skateboarding. Yeah. Like I couldn't think of another field where there's just one person. What about go on.
Tiger Woods.
I was getting Rory McIlroy, Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah. I guess Tiger Woods disappeared for a bit.
Yeah. You can make an, and I think you can make an argument for like a few others in that field as well.
I know what you mean though.
Yeah.
I don't think there is like a single person besides like, I don't know, does Kojima count?
Or in skateboarding?
No. Just like their name is like kind of on the front of every box.
Miyamoto though?
His game's not on the front of it. Like Mario doesn't have Miyamoto's name.
No, but as far as like creators go.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But it's like people go,
I know what you mean.
Skateboarding, yeah. I know Tony Hawk, couldn't name any other skateboarder, right?
Maybe like, Bam. Like I think someone actually asked me, they're like, oh, does someone else who was at the event, like it was one of the content creators, they're like, oh, so I know Bam's in the game. Does he actually have a history in skateboarding? I was like, yes, obviously. Like,
yeah.
That's what he was.
He's like, is he a Jackass guy? Yeah. Did I just totally make that up?
He was on Jackass. But okay. And he had like his own show, Viva La Bam and everything, but he definitely is a skateboarder first and foremost. So okay.
That's the main thing.
That's the history of the Tony Hawk franchise.
Alrighty, well let's talk about another game then, and that is Doom: The Dark Ages, which I know James and myself have spent a considerable amount of time with. I imagine Shannon's dabbled a bit too. Brody, have you had a chance to catch up on a bit of Doom as well?
I've only managed to play maybe the first, from what I understand, probably about the first third of the game.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a parallel universe in which you would have been doing the review of this, but obviously you were overseas at the time. So, James, you
had to get a number two in for it.
Not as long as James is breathing.
James, you helmed the review for this one. What did you score Doom the Dark Ages and why?
I came down on it with an 8.5 in the end.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit less than what I gave Eternal.
Just a little bit.
A little bit. Yep.
Perfect 10.
No. It's not a perfect 10, Brody.
Oh, sorry.
It's just a 10, okay? Anyway. No game is perfect. But, I think I want to, like, start off talking about this game by saying I still loved it. I still enjoyed it. I had fun from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I am just one of those people, and I know there's... I feel like Eternal was very divisive.
Mm.
Like, some people loved the complexity of it, the fastness of it. Some people obviously hated that. See, like...
Me, 100%.
Yeah, people like you, like...
We're basic bitches, Ewan.
Yeah. A lot of people I speak to, though, are like that. So, I don't hold that against you, personally, for what it's worth.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
You're just like the rest of the sheep.
I'm just so nice. I really liked Doom Eternal. Like, obviously, it's my favorite in the trilogy easily. I just feel like this game, while it's simplified, right? Like it's very more. I don't want to say simplified. Actually, it's more streamlined, I would say, compared to the other games. So, like, I feel like the combat loop is a lot more about. It's all like revolving around the shield, which to their credit is very good. Like, it's amazing to use the shield. Like, it never gets old in the whole campaign, right?
Yeah.
But, like, that shield kind of does the same job almost as the chainsaw, flamethrower, and I think frost cannon in the Eternal. Like, they've kind of really, like, streamlined that into one function. And while I like that, to me, it ultimately results in a game that is easier. As a result, I just kind of breezed through it. I didn't really have that, like, you know how Eternal has... I feel like with the first two Doom games at least, you kind of enter this almost like flow state where you're like kind of dancing between like, you know, glory kills and weapons and blah, 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 blah. So I didn't really have that in this. Like, I feel like I was just kind of playing it. I don't know how to put it into words. I mean, I did in my review, but like, you don't
going through the motions. I think there was like less thought and strategy. Required.
Yes, like I didn't. Yes, thank you, Shannon. Very, very articulate of you.
I didn't feel like I was ever having to think, oh, I need armor right now. I need to do this, or I need ammo. Yeah. So, like, it just kind of gives you what you need at any point in time.
It is like ostensibly simpler than Eternal, and that's why I didn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
Where, like, I'm pretty sure I'm correct, though, is that the mech stuff is really average. I didn't like that. I feel like that's... I don't know what the go is there. I know Shannon has a theory. He might want to share with us or not, but about what they are. But I felt that
I saw the mech bits... outside the office taking a shit.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I have a theory. What?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel
if
like
you've
those...
just cut to this point in the episode to listen to the Doom review, you're not going to get that joke. I'm sorry.
Yes. I feel like those bits break it up in a way, and they never really do anything with them. They just are there, and you just like hit shit and then move on. And I kind of see how that would be appealing to like a certain type of person, but that's not me. Yeah, yeah, maybe. Like, I think it's like, yeah.
If it was an open world game and like that was part of it, I think it'd be different. But I think just the way that the game is structured, it does kind of feel a little bit mishmashy. Like when you get to a mech section or whatever, like it just feels like it's just
and
like
all of those,
shoved in there.
And all of those levels are the same. Like they're just, you don't really do anything different. I think I said to Shannon, I was like, yeah, in the second one you get a gun. And he was like, you get a gun in the first one. I was like, oh. So like nothing, there's like no... progression there.
In saying that, I haven't played all of them, but I don't think it's like that offensive to the point that it ruins the game or anything.
I don't think they overstay their welcome, which is probably like
I like was a bit, and every time I started a level and I was in one, I was just annoyed. Like I so I don't know. Yeah. I was like, oh, I'll just get through this.
So my theory was, I know everyone's just at the edge of their seat, just before I forget it.
The question
was
on
that,
everyone's lips.
Yeah. That this was supposed to release with that like new Xbox controller that leaked that had like all the new haptics and the new adaptive triggers and stuff. And like that was meant to utilize the new Xbox controller. And now that I think of it, there are two Doom controllers as well. So that theory is one step further with that. I just think that makes sense. So, like, as the hero game for that new controller, these random bits in it.
Does it have those kind of haptics on the PS5 version?
Yes.
There were some...
Obviously not.
I actually frig... I want to get to it later, probably, James, but, like, I did frig about the settings of this game an awful lot, and I think turning off the adaptive triggers was one thing I did on the PlayStation. So maybe it did have something in mind for Xbox, but I don't know. Maybe there's merit to that theory, Shannon.
So, yes.
Thank you.
I agree. I didn't hate them. I was just like... I understand, like, this is your journey... Doom the Dark Ages, but like I'm not walking it with you. Like it's just not, it's not my vibe.
I'm out of the mech, so to speak.
Yeah absolutely, like get me out, I'll walk, thanks. But and then obviously the dragon stuff, I didn't hate that as much as I thought I would. I had heard a lot from a lot of other people that it was pretty average. I didn't mind it. I thought it was like a cute little diversion.
Adorable.
I don't, if I never had to play it again, I also wouldn't be upset. So, like, that was just there to me. Like,
I think the dragon and the mech moments were kind of almost worth it for those kind of, like, shots that you had of, like, the dragon landing or, like, the mech kind of, like, stepping onto the battlefield. Like, ridiculous, but, like, it was shot so well in a lot of those sequences, but, I'm glad... I feel like they were at their absolute limit in terms of what they included in the game. And it had been like a mission or two more, I'd have been gone, nah, this is like holding this game back. I think it kind of like went right up to the line without going over it personally.
I think despite those two elements, I still enjoyed it. Like I finished it like pretty quickly. I didn't want to really stop playing much.
You're a bit of a lore goblin, and I know you like soaking up the stories of these worlds, if you will. Seven levels in, I'm not really grabbed by this story. If you let me finish, I was going to ask, what did you think about the story?
Well, am I allowed to speak? That's please. The first question.
You have the floor.
I take this for what it is. Like it definitely is very what's the word? Like a shitty... It's like a shitty cartoon that's like... But, I don't know. Like to me, Doom has never had to have like this massive story, right? And I feel like with Eternal...
But I think what's most embarrassing is that they've tried to put story very much at the forefront while having these very expensive cutscenes.
Yes, I agree. But I still enjoyed whenever something happened, I was happy to watch. Like, I didn't want to skip it. I found it quite interesting. I found it interesting how they go to a... I don't want to ruin anything, but in terms of, like, one of the villains, the witch, I reckon they will be a big focus in the DLC. Whether it's a prequel or not, I'm not sure. Because there's not a lot given about that particular character. And I was really interested to see kind of how these different realms came together. And... I don't think it's amazing. Like, you're definitely just chasing this MacGuffin, like, through hell and then through somewhere else. But I don't know, like, I didn't mind it. I found it better than Eternal in that Eternal definitely just kind of dumps all this shit on you in a codex and expects you to read it. And I did, but I recognize a lot of people do. But I do think that's probably the better approach than the Dark Ages. But I still enjoyed this. I don't know. I don't really know what to say to you beyond I just thought it was neat, like Marge with the potato, right? Like, I don't think it's groundbreaking, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you it has, like, the emotional resonance of, like, The Last of Us or something.
No, which, I think it was, like,
a compliment.
It's a note probably used to
it in,
like,
what other people
mute
say.
Mute him.
Oh, my God.
Don't let him clarify.
I think it's probably, you know, like, an overused word in games, but the story, I'd maybe put it like just a level above serviceable. Like, it was, I think I was enjoying it enough, but I really felt like it only existed to kind of keep the story going. Like, I wasn't terribly invested in it or, like, where it was going to go. I was never left in, like, suspense or anything like that, but did give the game some momentum and kind of set up some cooler moments. I thought the characters were quite intriguing and, like, the different factions and stuff like that. So
the opening never having really connected was really
with
cool
the lore of it before
as well.
Yeah,
I thought. Yeah.
I think,
like,
it
just
makes
setting,
like,
it up.
The Doom Slayer look cool. Like, I don't, and that's, like, all you need, right?
There were some cool moments.
Yeah, exactly.
And I genuinely was, like, excited to see, like, say, him, because obviously he starts this game enslaved, and I was really excited to see, like, that moment where he, like, breaks
him
off.
Him free. The beast
and that's,
unleashed.
Like, and that's, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Tick-tock, you're out of time.
Again, I think because it's mission-based, it's so different to every other game in existence in, like, the way that it's, like,
wow,
just very old
call
school. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's just not games like that anymore levels with levels. Chapters. It's like cutscene level, cutscene level, like,
I think
ending
what you're
with
saying,
like,
are you trying to say there's no linear-ish first-person shooters anymore? Is that what... But isn't that what COD is? No?
I think you're
even
saying it's
that,
just weird
I think
that it
is
dumps
more...
you to a menu.
Yeah, like, it's very, okay. You know, you're getting a cutscene, you know, you're getting the mech segment, then a cutscene, then you know you're getting, it feels choppy, and the story equally feels choppy, just by the nature of the game, I think. Not to say it couldn't have been better, but it highlights those issues more than if it was just one long journey.
It's just hard. To me, it's hard now because I feel like every Doom game does something differently better. Like, like, in terms of... I feel like there's pros and cons to each game. Like, there's no best game in that series. And then to add another layer to that...
Hard to compare. Yeah.
Yeah. And then to add another layer to that, depending on what you want from a Doom game, you're going to have different tastes as well. So, what are you smirking about, Shannon?
It's just
share it with the class.
So deep, the Doom franchise.
No, well, it's deeper than...
I couldn't agree more.
Can I just say, like, on that note, for us to have three games in this industry that we're in, and they're all so different, but still all quite high quality, like, I think that's, like, something to be commended. Like, it's not just the same shit every game. Like,
just less mech. Less mech levels, and we're
absolutely
good.
Absolutely. Just, like,
I tweeted it the other day.
Like, take the dragon out the back and shoot it, and then retire the mech, and we're good.
I think the dragon was kind of cool. As were, like, the kind of more open levels that you wear. It's like, right, you've
got,
like,
these...
Yeah, but
Eternal had that too, didn't it? Or am I making that up? It did. It was less open than Dark Ages.
Yeah, it didn't feel nearly as open, I really appreciate that they haven't just, like, iterated on what was... like, evidently a successful formula with the previous two games, but they've, like, gone, okay, let's we've introduced something new with Eternal, let's introduce something new again with Doom the Dark Ages. And I feel like if you've not, like, connected with any of the two games, you could jump into this one and find it a very different experience and connect with it in a way you didn't before. And I think their marketing, like, I hadn't really given it credit, but like I now see the value in what they've done there with like the kind of stand and fight versus the rip and tear kind of language. Like Eternal is, yeah, like fast and frantic and you're getting up and close with the enemies quite often, where with like Doom Eternal, it's almost, you know, taking a leaf out of a FromSoft kind of style of game where you're kind of standing there and facing the enemies and using that sort of parry system, which I will say is very forgiving. And like you, James, I like found this a pretty easy game to get through. So I use the kind of Souls-like connection very loosely. But yeah, like it plays very, very differently, this game. And if previous play styles haven't suited you at all, then I think there's something to enjoy. That being said, I do prefer the faster paced game. Like, you know, I'm on the record on the podcast of being like a big Ghost Runner fan, or like really getting into Neon White, or like even kind of like Hotline Miami with the kind of pace of it too. Whereas like this game isn't really like that in that same sort of way. It is a bit more like you kind of have these one-to-one sort of confrontations and parrying and stuff like that. Yeah.
But you can adjust it. Which I actually... Did you adjust the speed at all, Ewan?
Of the parries? The parry window?
No, of the game. Game you speed. Can change the... You can make the whole game fast or slow.
I didn't know that. No. Wow.
Yeah. So one of the cool things I do like about this is you can almost tinker with it to make it similar in speed to Eternal if you want. I played the whole game at like 1.4 speed, I think.
Right.
Which was like pretty hectic. And I moved the parries down a bit to be less forgiving. It just made it like a tighter experience for me. So I don't know if that's going to be for everyone, but I do think if you really like Eternal, definitely play with those settings a lot. Or if you still think it's too fast, even though I feel like it's, you're running through maple syrup, but if you, if you do feel like it is too fast, you can even make it slower, which I think is cool.
I didn't really wade into the difficulty settings all that much, but there is like layers and layers and layers of them, right? Like I think that's quite a cool just approachability.
Well, apparently, it's because of that, it's woke now because you can choose your own difficulty.
Of course it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
So, yeah. But you can make it harder. So it's like, it's not really, it's like the opposite in one way. But
yeah.
But even like projectiles, you can make them faster, like enemy projectiles, or you can just make them slower, but say do more damage. Like I feel like there's a lot of options there to kind of create this experience that is closest to the Doom game, the Doom experience that you want. Because I do think this harkens back to like the OG game where it would chuck you in an arena and there would be all these enemies throwing out all of these projectiles at you and stuff, and you are strafing around them. So I think like it does feel very reminiscent of OG Doom in that way. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's probably like, I hate to say this, but it is my least favorite of the three games, but that's because
they're all just very high quality games.
I just love Eternal so much. Like so it was always going to be a hard game to top. I still really enjoyed it. So
I agree. And I think like I would probably align with you as well on the score. Like Eternal's probably like a 9 or a 9.5 in my mind. And this is kind of like an 8.5, just like slightly behind. Purely because it's systems I didn't think were connecting to me in the same way. And yeah, maybe some of those like dragon and mech sequences just kind
what
of
is,
dragged a little bit.
What is the meta? This is my first game on the fantasy.
I think it's sitting about
85
there.
Maybe.
Oh, is it?
Okay. So that's...
is this really your first game in May?
I think so.
James, I'm conscious we're going long on this, but I did want to get your thoughts on the music and personally the sound mix as well. I thought the mix was not great. I cranked a lot of the sound effects way down and cranked the music way up.
Yep. First of all, Shannon, it's 85. just so
great.
You know.
Spot on.
Yep. Love that for you. So this is the one area that like I can also pretty confidently say not as good. It's a huge shame that obviously all of that like behind the scenes drama has like fed into it, but I thought this music is just very generic, like heavy metal kind of soundtrack. I feel like there's a real opportunity to do something cool here. It just fades to the background, both literally and figuratively. I found like I couldn't tell you a single track from this game. I couldn't hum one.
Yeah,
for
none
you.
Of it's like real memorable. Yeah, like,
can you try?
Yeah, yeah, like, and I said this in my review. I said I can still hum like the Doom Eternal title screen song or like BFG Division from like the first game. Like, there's so many.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Come for
but
me.
Yeah, like, sing but for do you us. Know what? Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like Mick yeah. Gordon's work on those first two games is just so good, and so unique.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit disappointed by that, but I feel bad for the people who did this because it was always going to be a hard act to follow, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, it's just there, the music.
And I will say, like, it feels authentically Doom. Like, I think they've captured the essence of it, but it just doesn't. Yeah, it's just not memorable in the same way. Like, those riffs weren't kind of stuck in my head after it.
Like, it's almost like a AI prompt to try and do Doom music.
That seems too harsh to say, but
I feel like that's a bit like mean like to people who obviously create for their life. That's like their job. But I said it was generic, so that's probably just.
I've only heard seven levels worth, so forgive me. It probably gets better.
It doesn't get better. Like,
no. It'll all just kind of blend together, I think, Brody.
I feel like I've only heard one song, to be honest.
That's how it feels. Yeah, it's all the same. There's just not much there. And especially, like, towards the end, they can do some really cool shit with the different areas, but they don't. So, yeah.
And I did worry that it was just the mix. I was like, I feel like it's kind of just getting buried in, like, the rest of the noise of the game. So I tried bringing it more to the forefront. And even then, I was like...
Now you know why they buried
it. It's not having the impact that I want. What did you say there? Sorry.
Now you know why they buried it.
Yeah, well, maybe. Maybe it was a little concerted an effort. Yeah.
But to summarize, very different to the previous two games. Still worth a shot if you did or did not like the other games. And still very fun.
Game Pass.
Just a few little speed bumps across the way.
Yeah. And Game Pass. Very good shout.
Game Pass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No risk. Mm-hmm. All right. Quickly to James. Would you recommend Capcom Fighting Collection 2 as well? That was another game you reviewed.
I didn't see that in the notes. Sure. Why not? If you like fighting games, give it a shot. If not...
Buy Capcom.
Yeah. No. Well, they're the only ones that make good fighting games. But for sure. I don't think this collection is as good as the previous ones, but I think it's cool to have all of these old games available to play in a modern format with online. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right, we've got a special bonus segment this week, which you'll hear in a mo. Shannon and I got to record a special tech time with Shannon, thanks to Asus and their new ROG Strix Scar 18, an absolute beast of a gaming laptop that we kind of discussed in the context, I suppose, Shannon, of everything happening in the PC gaming space at the moment as well. So we're going to be back with more gaming news after this segment, but we're going to cut to that conversation now. Well, Shannon, we've got a rare opportunity on our hands here today, because it's rare we get an opportunity to sit down and just talk tech in a bit of a special, like, tech time with Shannon.
Face to face,
in one of our studios, no less, not in the confines of our bedroom.
Yep.
We get to do this today with a special thanks to Asus and their new ROG Strix Scar 18 laptop, which you have had the privilege of being able to spend a bit of time with recently. We've got it in front of ourselves right here in the studio too, and I've not yet had nearly as much of a play with it as I'd like, but just looking at it and seeing you poke around some of its menus and stuff as well, I'm like immediately jealous, particularly sat opposite with you with my little iPad mini right now. I'm eager to kind of have a bit more of a discussion today, not just around the laptop in particular, but your thoughts on kind of the PC gaming space at the moment, and kind of the involvement that AI is having in it too. So real geeky talk that Brody and James would never let us have, but here we are in a special segment, so
over.
Thanks again to Asus for that. First of all, though, seeing as you've got it in front of us here, I'm eager to ask you about it. The ROG Strix Scar 18 laptop, what's notable about this laptop? What kind of sets it apart?
I think definitely the thing, like, I'm sure you can tell just by looking at it, is, like, there are no, nothing spared with this laptop. Like, it is a beast. It is high-end in every sense. Like, obviously, 5090, the 18-inch display, which is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
LEDs on the back, which I don't know why you would need that, but you would love to have it, I'm sure. So that is just the number one thing. Like, if you want the best gaming laptop on the market, in terms of every single spec, like, this is the beast for you.
We're going to have to get the video version of this out, so I think so people can see that, like, LED panel on the back, but I've seen you also share videos of it too, and it's in the article on the website. But yeah, such, like, a cool little feature. Have you, like, I presumably you can customize that?
You can. I think you can put images, you can put your own GIFs on it. So whatever you want to do, or you can just, like, have the time or battery or, like, CPU, GPU information. Like, it's really customizable, which is great because, like, it's nothing without the software to back it up.
And I saw you play a bit of Spider-Man on there before. I take it you've played a few different games on there, kind of given it a run for its money.
100%. Like, everything. I think that the number one thing with laptops is, like, they've always ran AAA games, but, like, normally you have to dial things back. Like, with this,
you compromise a little bit.
With this, I had everything cranked up, like Cyberpunk 2077. You can put it in ray tracing overdrive at ultra, and it, like, it doesn't miss a beat. Like, you're utilizing the display to its full capacity.
I kind of get the sense that if you rocked up at a LAN party with this, you'd be kind of like gods amongst men. It's like you've not spared any expense here, 100%. And you've really got all the bells and whistles. The screen's HDR too, right?
It is. It's Nebula HDR. I think it's their brightest display ever. Yeah, you can tell. I don't know if you can see it on the screen here, but even just looking at this background, I don't even know if HDR is turned on, but it is super vibrant.
Yeah.
Which is important for a laptop and an 18-inch screen.
Given, like, it's portable, you're taking it out. Maybe you're going for a lovely picnic in the park and taking your gaming laptop with you as well.
100%.
That brightness is important. Cool. We've already covered off a lot about that, but I suppose we're touching on, some of the kind of like portability aspects of it too. I know you're no stranger to handheld gaming PCs. I think you've got an ROG Ally as well. So another ASUS product too. What do you think the advantages of something like this is over one of those handheld gaming PCs?
I think they're totally different. Like, ASUS has been really upfront with the fact that, like, this is not meant to be something that you take with you absolutely everywhere. Like, it's portable in the sense
as
you can.
As much as I would.
It's portable in the sense you can bring it into the office or take it with you overseas. But, like, it is a workstation. Like, it is a beast. So I guess your ASUS ROG Ally is, like, meant to just be chucked in your bag wherever you're going. I think that the benefit of this is you can just use it 24/7 as your main station without a monitor attached to it. If you want to work or video edit, or, like, I know so many people now are creatives that game, but also video edit during the day, or I guess everyone's just making TikToks now. So this is, like, your all-in-one that you're going to pay for, but you're then going to be able to use for absolutely everything with no holds barred.
Yeah, in a past life, I used to work in an animation studio, and they all had gaming laptops despite, you know, working with Blender and After Effects and all this sort of thing, but because of that power and portability. And I think they would have been pretty envious of this piece of kit, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think putting myself in, like, that sort of, in those sort of shoes too, like, I do like the kind of ultra portability of that, but there is an inherent trade-off, right? Like, you're not getting max specs on those games.
100%.
Whereas, like, I feel like this would rival my desktop PC at home.
I reckon it'd beat it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is, like, battery as well. Like, obviously you can only fit so much battery in a handheld where, like, the surface area of this and the fact that it is bigger means you can slot a really good battery.
And we've got it plugged in just now because we thought we might run some games on it as well. Maybe we do that after the after this recording. But yeah, you're surprised just turning it on this morning, you still have battery life. So presumably you're pretty happy with that.
I think that, and I'm sure, again, ASUS wouldn't mind us saying that, like, battery life in Windows gaming PCs has been, like, one of the areas that has been a letdown. I was actually really impressed, especially with the RTX 50 series laptops, like, how long they do last. I think because we're using more of that AI generated frames and, like, the CPUs are a lot more power efficient. Like, it lasts hours, like, whilst with everything cranked. So again, you're not going to get 18 hours if you're playing Cyberpunk at ray tracing overdrive, but similarly you're not going to get half an hour, you're going to get hours out of it.
Very cool. You mentioned there a little bit, like, the AI side of things, or at least with the 5000 series NVIDIA graphics cards. This has a, like, a pretty special CPU in it too, though, as well. Like, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Intel Core Ultra 9, got some of these names that are really tongue-twisters, but yeah, I think it's just all about power efficiency now. Like, we've kind of, not that we've reached the power limit, but it's like, how can we sort of maximize what we have and, like, get more out of the battery, get more out of what's there? How can we utilize AI so that we're not running everything on board? And that is the case for both the Intel CPU and the GPU. And I guess laptops do this really clever thing now where they, like, go back to the CPU if they don't need the GPU, so you're not using that and can just use CPU for less intensive tasks.
Yeah.
So it is still really important, the CPU, but yeah, I think AI is just enhancing performance and efficiency.
Yeah, and that power efficiency would be like particularly useful in the kind of more portable market as opposed to your kind of home desktop PC under your desk, 100%.
Right? Again, performance is important, but I think in portable devices, like efficiency is just as important.
Yeah, and that seems to be more of a trend that we're seeing kind of in all devices that kind of come to market as well. We've been talking about the Switch 2 as well, 100%. Right? There's lots of efficiency gains in there. So
it's all about the trade-off of performance versus efficiency. Yeah, and I think we're finding that really nice balance now.
Yeah, I guess selfishly, that's why I like having these conversations with you, because like in the PC space and like what ASUS are doing with this, right? Like it's kind of more at the cutting edge of that. Like we kind of see that technology kind of come through in the PC market first before it then maybe comes across to consoles.
100%.
Not always true, but I think very true at the moment.
Yeah, if you're a handheld gamer, like if you're a Switch gamer and you're picking up something like this, like that is when you really see like, wow, how much power is in this laptop? Because being able to play like Spider-Man 2, The Last of Us Part to Horizon Forbidden West, Cyberpunk, like you can just load anything, maximize it, and it just runs so battery smooth and it looks so incredible, even compared to like the PS5, to be honest.
Yeah, very cool. All right, let's chat about like AI and the NVIDIA 50. Remind me again, there's a 5090 in this?
It is a 5090 laptop, which is a little bit
less beefy. Yeah, shaved off a little bit, but I'd have thought when you're dealing with 5090s, it's all pretty nuts.
100%. Like I just touched on, I think, again, I know multi-frame gen, there's been a little bit of...
Yeah, DLSS4 and stuff, I wanted to ask you about 100%. That. That's all the new tech that's
The tech
on this.
That's in the desktop version of the 50 series is in this. And I do think, again, you really benefit from that. I know that there is a conversation to be had around like AI-generated frames, but I just think being able to turn that on, again, you're really utilizing the smaller chip in this, and like it feels like a desktop GPU, which is important, I think.
And I know it's a talking point, like multi-frame gen, like a lot of the kind of improvement gains that we've seen in this generation of graphics card are kind of down to the involvement of AI and it kind of... I suppose like filling in the gaps between some frames and using some of that kind of generative functionality to kind of imagine what those frames are.
Yeah.
People's concern has been like, well, how accurate is it kind of getting the image? Are you seeing some visual sort of quirks, that kind of thing? And we've already seen that a little bit with the kind of technology that's come. This is the latest iteration of it. Are you like noticing anything kind of quirky or funky as you're playing these games? Does anything ever stand out?
I'm not. I think it was a little bit buggy like pre-launch, like with the original desktop GPUs. But now that I've had a really good play with this, I think it's really been ironed out, and obviously support's rolling out on a lot more games. So it does just feel similarly to how DLSS was originally. Like it was a little bit clunky and like wasn't in a lot of games at first. But I really, unless you're playing like Marvel Rivals or something really competitive, CSGO or something, and you, I guess, need that refresh rate to be as good as it possibly is. I think if you're playing a story-driven game, like, you just turn it on and forget that it's on.
That's
saying that, without multi-frame gen, you're still going to get 60 to 100 frames. It's just a push to that, like, 250. You do need to use multi-frame gen, and I think it's worth it.
Yeah, and it's... I guess it depends on what you want, right? Like, do you really obsess over, like, a higher frame rate? I tend to lean a little bit more that way myself.
Yeah.
So I reckon I'd be tempted to kind of switch it on and try and gun for like 100 plus sort of frames. You don't need to.
I'm
pretty content getting a little bit of extra sort of fidelity in the game and like sitting at 60. Like I'm playing a bit of Clair Obscur at the moment, and that's kind of more the direction I'm leaning.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can imagine if you are pushing it like 100 plus frames, 200 plus frames, whatever we're sort of saying, like in motion... It's like one thing to do a freeze frame or a slow motion these frames and pick apart every little bit of artifacting, but I can imagine like in motion it's very hard to notice like any like weird quirk in the...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, again, I'm like technical, but I'm not like the most insane PC gamer that would notice it. There's not enough that the average person would notice. And again, it's literally a menu setting, so you turn it off, you turn it on.
Yeah.
And again, it's about finding that balance. Like some games will be great with just general frame gen. Some games you might want to crank up to 3 or 4.
Yeah. Can you see yourself? I'm curious. I'm going off script already here, but given you're kind of like, you've got this PC now in the house and you've been dabbling kind of more in the PC space, are you like more inclined to spend a bit more time PC gaming as opposed to console? What do you kind of see as the pros and cons?
It's such a hard balance. Like every time I jump on a PC to play a game, like even like Spider-Man and The Last of Us, like it does amaze me just how good they look and how smooth they are.
Yeah.
But then for me, it's like I work on a PC like 12 to 14 hours a day. So
so scene change is nice.
Yeah.
Like, well, you could get that with the portability.
That's why probably a laptop is more in that way, because I can just play it on the couch or in bed or at a table rather than like sit at my like traditional setup.
Or in the office, as you said, you brought it
100%. That's what all we're going to do today. Yeah, I definitely think it's more viable now than ever.
Yeah. Back to AI. Do you think it's here to stay? Like, it's kind of a buzzword at the moment. We're seeing it integrate with a lot of products. I feel like half the time it's maybe just to appease shareholders.
Yeah.
But do you think at the moment it's kind of living up to a hype? Can you see the tech continuing to progress? And we'll see more of it in products like the ROG Strix Sky you've got here?
I 100% think when it comes to like performance and like generating frames and processing, like it's here, it's here to stay. It's always been here. Like it's accelerating faster than ever. I don't think that's a fad in the way that like your image generation is. And I think like we're seeing Nintendo come out and like really leverage that and actually talk about it and how it's improved their gaming and graphical fidelity. So I do think that's here to stay. I don't think NVIDIA is going to move away from it or any of these other big brands. And for as long as they're pushing it, it's going to be here to stay. I think it'll become less of a buzzword and just what it is in the tech, to be honest.
Yeah.
Which I think is good because I don't think it needs to be the selling point. I don't think that means anything to the end consumer. It's like, how does that actually impact your daily life and improve it?
Yeah. And I suppose like AI really is just like a term that's kind of being like kind of brand, like branding and all
it,
of
that
this.
That is the problem, is, right? Like it is, it's become a marketing term, even though it's not really a new thing.
It's more just, like, machine learning. Like algorithmic driven processes, that sort of thing.
It's scary. And I think it has become a negative thing, but I do think in the sense of like tech and gaming and processing, like the more that we're generating without using like actual energy is good. And then there's like conversations around that as well. I think it'll iron out and we'll find a good balance of what uses AI and what doesn't.
Yeah. But it's a bit of a different case, I guess, when it's like on machine like this, right? Yeah. And it's got the power it needs to kind of function on device.
100%.
Which I think, is really cool. And I know we are here talking about gaming, but I'm personally very excited about like the productivity benefits of that too, which we touched on earlier.
100%.
Excellent. I think we're kind of about covered off some of the deeper sort of topics 100%. That I wanted to get into then about like AI. Let's just close off by chatting about this product once again, the ROG Strix Scar 18. You've had a bit of time with it. What are the kind of features that really kind of like are the most compelling, do you think, about this laptop? And who would you might recommend it to if they've listened into this, found that the AI tech all super interesting?
I definitely think if you are someone that wants like a laptop with everything and you're not going to think, oh, I should have got that with X, Y, and Z, like this is the laptop for you, just because everything from the display to the keyboard to RGB all around the bottom to give it that floating effect to the keyboard to the LEDs on the front is a lot of it something you absolutely need to survive? Probably not. But if you're someone that just wants the best of the best, this is it in a laptop.
Yeah, and looking at it from the first time now, like, I'm on the record, like, complaining about, like, the garishness of some kind of gaming tech.
Yeah.
This isn't that. Like, I think this is, like, a pretty clean sort of integration. I love, like, the way that you can kind of just customize that LED panel in the back. And that, that floating, like, it reminds me of people, like, mod their cars, and they have, I think it's illegal, actually. you see those, like custom jobs where it's like it has the LED on the ground, looks like it's levitating. It's got that sort of vibe to it.
Yeah,
I
mean it's a beast of a laptop. Like there's no point shying away from that. But it's still understated and you can just turn it off or turn it up. With Armoury Crate, which again if you've used an Asus ROG Ally, you know that software is pretty great and customizable and you can set it to like when you're gaming, when you're not, when X, Y, and Z. Like it's very
So is that kind of like it lets you control the cooling of it?
100%
That's for like fan curves and all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Very, very fun. I like messing with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Shannon, this has been great. Like I said earlier, I don't think we would ever really get this opportunity with Brody and James. They never let us waffle on for like 10, 15 minutes, however long it's been about tech. So big thank you to Asus and the ROG Strix Sky 18 for giving us this opportunity to really have an extended tech time with Shannon.
100%.
Be sure to head to Asus's website. You can check out more information, including all the specs and features of the laptop. But you've also done a review over on the site.
Yep.
You've got plenty of videos and images in there as well, including some of the games in action on it too, which I might ask you to give me a demo of after we close up the record.
For work purposes, of course.
Yeah, for work purposes, of course, yeah. I've got no report writing to do later today. It's fine. So do go and check out the website for all of that. You'll find that all there. But until next time, that's been about it for this little bonus segment.
Yes.
And we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
All right, we're back from that special tech time with Shannon. Now I want to talk about Square Enix.
Wasn't it,
Josh?
That was really good.
Brady.
I think it was penetrating.
That might be the best tech time with Shannon we've ever had.
We didn't think we would ever get away with like doing it in the show because we literally went on for about 15 minutes, like deep dive into PC tech. And we thought they would lose the two of you.
If you want to hear it again and it was that good, just look down. You'll have the timestamps. Just go back because
it was
that good.
Just go back.
Leave a comment.
All right. After that, though, I want to talk about Square, who recommitted to quality over quantity strategy, which I'm all for, prioritizing fewer games and multi-platform releases instead, I guess, of like a focus on like exclusive titles here and there. This all came way of a financial update in the week. Shannon, first to you. What do you make of this strategy? And would you like to see more publishers kind of following in Square's footsteps?
I mean, I think so. I think I've spoken at length about how it's never been harder to have a hit in this industry, right? And I think, I don't know the exact numbers, not being the biggest Square fan, but I think like the last Final Fantasy and a few other games have flopped, right? Like, I think they've gone on the record to say that I don't think it's even...
Fallen short
like,
of expectations, I think.
Yeah.
Square does have lofty maybe. Expectations, though, yeah, to be fair.
They do.
But the brand is not growing.
I
definitely think that we've spoken about Square publishing some really questionable titles, so I think it's good that they're cleaning that up and focusing their efforts on core titles and ones they know are going to be successful and making that call earlier, like the Kingdom Hearts game that they just cancelled, which I assume is like part of the effort to sort of get rid of something before it comes out and fails, essentially. So I think it's definitely going to be seen across the board from all publishers going forward. Now more than ever.
Or going like too far down a bumpy road or something, I suppose.
Yeah.
Brody, like given the focus on like multi-platform games, I'm kind of conscious that's something we're just seeing more industry-wide as well. PlayStation obviously bringing more games to PC, Xbox doing their thing, bringing games to PlayStation as well. Kind of seen as unprecedented, but now feeling more of the norm. Are you kind of broadly supportive of just games being available everywhere, or do you kind of have a soft spot for exclusive titles in any way?
I still have a soft spot for exclusives, I think, even though Xbox doesn't really have any anymore, so to speak. I like exclusives from first party, you know, studios and publishers. Like, I feel like in the case of Square, like it was always, you know, Sony buying up exclusivity, like with these time deals and stuff like that. And I don't know, you could probably make an argument that that is a little grimier than, you know, built in or like in-house exclusives and stuff like that. I think broadly speaking, like I would definitely like to see these games in more places. And I think that is evident, and evidently happening, as obviously like the new Final Fantasy games are coming to Switch 2 and stuff like that. So, if they're going to lean up their operations, I suppose, and focus on less titles but better titles, then it sort of makes sense for them to try and recoup, I guess, these budgets and stuff by putting them everywhere. And I think Switch will be a big part of that. Like Xbox, I don't know. I guess time will tell whether the user base or the install base there is going to be worth reaching. If they at least expand upon or like beyond PlayStation, like I think that's going to be a good start for them in terms of making some money and meeting some of those goals that they've got.
Yeah, I think it makes good business sense. And I'm like kind of happy from a gamer's perspective as well. Like, you know, we have the luxury of like having all the consoles kind of at our disposal. So platform exclusivity isn't really a deal breaker for us. But just for like these releases to come out, particularly Final Fantasy or something like that, it's such a cultural moment. I kind of want everyone to be able to experience that together. And even like kind of like these third party exclusivity deals that are sort of struck, like i.e. Bloodborne with PlayStation or whatever. Like, I think that just like ultimately like works against the kind of strength of that IP and stuff. Like, yes, PlayStation now own that, I suppose, but it's like kind of languishing there, right? They refuse to do anything more with it. So yeah, I think prioritizing multi-platform releases and maybe kind of opting out of some of those exclusivity deals for the sake of just reaching as many players as they can day one makes a lot of sense. I'm pretty happy for that. James, what do you make of this strategy from Square? I feel like we've sat in on a few kind of game showcases, Summer Games Fest, that kind of thing, and seen a bunch of Square releases that we've maybe rolled our eyes at going, why are they bothering with this? Like, do you think we'll see less of that in future?
Yeah, I think this is good for them. I think they just need to just get their pipeline sorted in terms of, like, just so you've got more games coming out steadily and just being clever with, like, you know, if you're going to do remakes and main and new games, like, I hate to keep bringing them up, but like Capcom, like, you know, you you kind of do work in one game that a lot of it can transfer over to the new game and stuff. And I feel like that's very beneficial. Yeah. I just think Final Fantasy, they just need to, like, start, like, they just need to, I don't know, grow it somehow. Like, I don't know how. I think I've said before, it doesn't really appeal to new fans. I feel like it's very much appealing to people who have played them all before. Maybe even, this might be controversial, but drop the numbers. Like, I feel like a lot of people don't play 16, because, like, I haven't played the other 15. It's like, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But I still
and they make that every effort to, like, say, you don't need to have played any other one, but just having the number on it, it does. It deters people. Interestingly, that costs more, like, than the rest of the marketing.
How did, like, Strangers of Paradise do in terms of, like, meeting any goals?
I mean, abysmally, but that didn't have good word of mouth, and it also had a bad... Yeah. Even though, like, I think that game is, like, so underrated, but it had really bad word of mouth. The reveal was shit. And then the demo didn't work for like 3 days when it first came out. So, like, it just was not a good time. But yeah. I don't know.
I reckon 16, though, without 16 in the title, like, probably would have done better, right?
I agree. But then I also don't see, going to what Shannon was saying before, I don't see Kingdom Hearts moving the needle for them. Like, 3 was not the best. Like, it was pretty average for how long it took to come out. I don't see Kingdom Hearts 4, which adds to that already stupid convoluted storyline. Like, it that is more impenetrable to me to that in Final Fantasy games. Like, I feel like if Final Fantasy can't make it, like, what hope does Kingdom Hearts have? Which might be controversial.
I don't know, it's got the Disney factor.
Like, what's Disney now? Like, it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Capcom a moment ago. They announced their 8th consecutive year of record-breaking results and their 12th year of profit growth. So clearly they're doing something right, James. What lessons do you think other publishers can learn from them? You mentioned, I guess, like, learning one thing in one game to then kind of carry over tech and assets into another. Is there more to their secret sauce than that?
Just put out good shit, man. Like, that's... Nah, I think it's just a mix. I think Capcom has always been, you know, like the big tentpole games like Resident Evil and Monster Hunter, maybe Onimusha. But then also just like all of the little like remasters and stuff, like Ace Attorney, this Capcom Fighter Collection as an example. I do think there's something to
making
be...
six good games and then re-releasing them over and over again on every platform. That's...
Well, Naughty Dog learnt from them, didn't they?
Big zombie remastered day.
Re-release them. Yeah, but honestly, and I think there's actually something to be said also about the way Capcom treats their back catalogue. Like, I think the Resident Evil games go on sale very regularly, as an example, and people might grab one of those up for cheap, play that, and then go play the other ones, and then be keen for the new one.
Did you read the same financial data that I did? Because you're spot on there.
No, I haven't read any of this.
That's just your intuition.
He is that's genuine. But I'm like, I'm being like deadly serious. Like, I feel like that's how you get new people in. Like,
I'm saying you're like spot on. Like, that's what. So they released a bunch of data alongside this, and it was that, like, you know, Resident Evil 7, like, is still selling really well, and I think added another million units like in the last year.
Which, for a game, they put that down to their price discounting sort of policy.
Like,
sure, they might not be making money off those discounted units straight away, but, like, I think long term, like, you're creating fans, Resident Evil fans, and that's not a bad. That's never a bad thing to have more Resident Evil fans.
Well, Resident Evil. Sorry, I keep saying Final Fantasy. Resident Evil 7 got me.
Did you know this topic was coming up, or did you?
I genuinely didn't. I didn't read the notes today.
Just likes being surprised by the show notes that I prepare for him, but I've done him a favor today. All right, I reckon we leave that convo there and talk about Super Mario World seemingly being the name of the next Mario movie. It's less than a year away from releasing with a scheduled release date of April 3rd, 2026. And thanks to what seems to be a slip-up from NBC Universal, they put out a press release that had Super Mario World as the title listed amongst a slate of other upcoming major movies. And have since removed the title from that list, which looks all the more sus, and we're taking as kind of confirmation, really, that that is the title. Shannon, first to you, what do you make of the title? Does it make you any more or less excited for the next Super Mario movie?
I think it makes me excited. I think it fits with what happens at the end of the first movie, and it's one of my favorite Mario games, so I'm keen for it. I think everyone didn't really know what direction it was going to go, and I don't even know if it really matters too much what the name is, but if you're going to land on one, I think this is a good one to land on.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. Brody, have your kids watched the Mario movie yet? Do you think they'll have an interest in this?
They have. We saw it at the cinemas. It was their first cinema experience.
That's cute.
Yeah, look, I think they'll be excited for another one. I mean, we've watched it a couple of times since again on Netflix and so forth, so
yeah. Are you over it yet?
Pardon me?
Are you over it yet?
I was over it the first time.
Oh, okay.
There's some movies that I can watch on loop that the kids like I don't, Cars. Cars 3 is phenomenal, but wow. Yeah, Mario movie is not it.
Do you think they're fans of Yoshi, or do they have an affinity with any
They'll
particular
love Yoshi.
Character?
They'll yeah, love okay. Yoshi. Like, he's a little dinosaur. They'll fucking love him.
I just hope, like, with Yoshi, that they don't make them speak, because I don't like, I can see them like putting like Awkwafina as Yoshi or something, like something horrendous, like
that's what's gonna happen kind. You can see actually, it now.
Yeah,
does this pour water on the idea of like Donkey Kong playing a bigger role in this film, or was that always like
a separate,
spin-off,
wasn't that a yeah. rumored separate movie or something? Yeah, I feel like Donkey Kong is about to have his moment.
He's bonanzas, going to be
it's
here
Donkey
in a big
Kong.
Way.
Donkey Kong days.
Crazy to think that we're likely going to work through this and eventually get like a Super Mario Galaxy movie and stuff like that. Nah. I feel like that's
yeah.
inevitable.
Oh, I like that they're kind of setting it up to just like name them after that as well.
And then
Super
Smash
Mario
Bros.
Odyssey. Yeah, like you can just have them kind of named after those franchises. Do we get like a kart racing movie at some point? Brad Pitt behind the wheel of a Mario Kart.
No.
Yeah, that'd be something. Well, he's in the F1 movie.
He's talking about F1 movie,
parallel,
right?
Story.
That, yeah.
I guess that's a link. Yeah, okay.
That's
tenuous at best.
Mario Kart was already in the last movie, so it's like, you know.
Yeah, true. You couldn't do a dedicated karting movie, I guess.
That'd be so boring. No offense to anyone who watches F1, but that in a movie? Ugh. Anyway.
I'm here for it.
Sure.
I have a rapid-fire question for you all, though, to close out the show. Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra, the upcoming game starring Captain America and Black Panther, has been delayed until 2026. We're waiting for Amy Hennig to catch a break. But no, like, we're good. We're supportive of delays. We've spoken about that long in the past. This one being given to allow the team more time to add polish and deliver the best possible experience. I'm curious, though, a bit of a pulse check as the rapid-fire question today. Are we excited for Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra? I've been a long time between drinks for an Amy Hennig directed game, so I for one am very excited for it. I'll put my hand up and say yes. Shannon, what do you think?
No, I don't think so. I just think, yeah, no,
the Marvel factor maybe works against it a little bit.
Yeah,
James?
I mean, like, I'm not like beating down the doors to try and play this.
I'd be shocked
soon.
If you were.
Yeah. Like, but I, yeah, that, yeah, no, not at the moment. I mean, I gotta see more, but right now, no.
Brady?
Yeah, similar to James, I don't think we've seen quite enough of this game to really have a feeling one way or the other.
Yeah, I suspected that might be the case. All right, let's play What the Wiki, the Press Start podcast game show, where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page from an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with a round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. Last week, that was James, who... I hope I've got the scoring updated. Does this feel right?
I reckon he should be even with me, unless he clicks.
I'm a bit higher.
Because James got the 2 points, but I think he Shannon got one in between. So
I'm going to go back. I'm going to sort this. I'm going to set the record straight next episode, okay?
Okay. At the moment, I've got the scoring. Me on 15, Brody on 13, James on 11, Shannon on 6.
I think James should definitely be 13.
We're flying blind. It's fine.
Nevertheless.
Maybe you and James are tied. Anyhow, James, you're in the hosting chair today.
Because you had me as the winner there, which implies you haven't changed the score for James winning at all.
Well, I think I didn't change you as the winner, but I was, anyway, it was meant to be.
Yeah,
we'll look at the show notes, talking through it. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
These actually come from a friend of the show. Oh. So shout out to Nina. She has picked these games for everyone.
Pasadena. Big Nina day.
Big Nina day. Absolutely. So is everyone ready to go?
I hope Nina's helped me out here.
I don't think she has, if I'm being honest.
Oh, no.
But we'll see.
How niche typical does Nina really.
Oh, niche Nina.
She's interesting.
Anyway. Is it Aragon, the video game?
She knows who she is. Actually, I don't think she does. But who does, really, at the ripe old... Anyway, let's move on. Okay. This game is... Oh my god. This game is an action platformer with the player controlling the titular character. The player is initially equipped with the TS-1000, which can sweep up parts of the environment.
Shannon.
Gold crystal.
No.
Yes, yes, Shannon.
Blinks the time sweeper. Is that...
It is, Shannon. Well done. Congratulations.
I'm surprised Brody didn't get that. I thought he was going to beat me to it.
Don't doubt yourself, Shannon.
Big thanks to Nina, Shannon.
Big thanks to Nina for that one.
Okay, let's
big
go.
Big blinks.
Next one. Everyone ready?
Wait, is this Shannon's grandma?
I FaceTimed her before the show. Yeah. On the way. Yeah. Actually, she FaceTimed me unsolicited.
So I have some other wiki suggestions for you.
Yeah. Okay. This game is a third-person shooter with a shoot-em-up and action-adventure elements in which the player controls the player character from a third person. The game places strong emphasis on shooting large numbers of enemies while dodging their attacks. Although much of the game is spent in battle, the player also has the ability to jump, hang from ledges, swim, and fly using jetpacks. In combat, the player is free to set on a manual aiming system with the targeting camera fixed behind the camera's head. Ugh, this is boring. Nina. In the game's single-player modes, the player must explore a galaxy that is composed of 15 non-linear worlds. Each world is composed of a series of stages with areas interconnected. When progressing, the player can take control of 3 different characters. Each character has a special ability that allows them to uncover areas which the other characters cannot reach. No. Yes, Ewan.
I feel like that's thrown me, but Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart?
No. The male character can walk through magma, the female character can swim underwater forever, and the dog can hover for a short period of time. Therefore, choosing
the right
character...
Sounds like a game I
want
to play.
Oh, well, you can right now. Therefore, choosing the right character for the right stage is critical to complete the game. Initially, the game forces the player to use the 3 characters individually until they reach a meeting point. In addition to the single-player mode, this game features a multiplayer mode where 2 to 4 players can compete in traditional deathmatch. Some multiplayer aspects, such as levels and characters, must be unlocked by finding a corresponding secret in the single-player mode. Players can also unlock racing minigames that are played from an overhead perspective. The game features no split-screen cooperative mode. Oh, no, it actually features a split-screen cooperative mode. Where a second player may control a floating robot that automatically follows the main character in single player. This has really thrown you all. I think it's probably too vague. I need to get a bit more specific.
It feels familiar, though.
Yeah.
It's got me fucked with the dog, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Did you said space, right?
Yeah.
Like different planets?
Yeah. Inspired by 80s arcade games and more recent titles of the time, such as Super Metroid and Mario 64, this game blends elements of both shoot-em-up and action-adventure games. Work such as Aliens, Stargate, and Battle of the Planets were major influences. The game follows the story of these three members of a galactic law enforcement team as they try to stop a horde of drones led by an insectoid called Miser. The player must explore the galaxy to save tribals, a race of survivors who have been enslaved and imprisoned by Miser.
Stop saying
this is a blind spot for all three of us. Was there an emphasis on a word there that was meant to be a hint?
Yeah.
The game is
Big Miser Day.
1999 third-person shooter developed and published by Rare for the Nintendo 64. Yes, Brody.
99. Is it Jet Set Gemini?
Shannon. Jet Set Gemini Reloaded.
No. You've got to... Do we have to get the title right? We need to... I think it's
your call, James. You're hosting.
No, you do. I feel like whenever I've got it wrong by a bit.
You in the past, get fucked.
Get it right. Brody doesn't need the handicap. He's winning in a big way.
I'm not.
Is it you and Twitter. Is it Jet Force Gemini?
Shit.
What he's that is made?
Yeah, Brody, no, that's right.
I think I should pay Ewan. What are your thoughts?
That is fair.
Okay, cool. That is very big of you, Brody. I really appreciate that.
I was like, honestly, was he right with Jet Set Gemini?
I thought I had it right, and then I realized it was Jet Set Radio.
It is Jet Force Gemini. Congratulations, Ewan.
Thank you.
Completely.
I'll take it. I need every point I can get, really.
Yeah, I no longer want
to
play it.
To fend off James.
Now you're only more in front.
This one's a bit random, but we'll go with it. 2 seconds.
That was a good one.
I forgot.
That game sounds great.
Yeah, well,
it's on Rare Replay.
It's available on Rare Replay right now. You can play
there
it
you go.
On Game Pass. The game is an action-adventure game played from a third-person perspective. The player can customize the gender, voice, and appearance of the main character. After unlocking something, the player can... No, this is irrelevant. The game is set on the Golden Isle, a large open world consisting of 7 distinct regions inspired by Greek mythology. The player is accompanied by Phosphor, a bird who can identify
Brody?
Locations of interest.
Ewan? Or
yes. Oh, Brody was first.
Immortals Phoenix Rising?
It is Immortals Phoenix Rising. Does that mean everyone has a point?
I think so, yeah. It forces a tiebreaker.
Well done, Nina.
Well done, Nina.
Okay.
What a round.
Yeah, she's... I can't believe she got you all with Jet Force Gemini.
Stumped.
Her greatest achievement.
Jet
truly.
Set Gemini.
I mean, it was 3 yeah, when it came Gemini. Out, so...
Oh, who cares? You still... Just take the win. Okay, I reckon this one will be quick. This is it. The winning point. In this game, the player controls the titular character, an elf who sabotages her sister before her coronation to take the crown and the powers that come with it. This causes her sister to free the troll king Thorn and form an alliance to take back her crown. The main character uses powers to transform into creatures with different abilities,
Brody?
Which she switches... Yes, Brody.
Is this Cameo?
It is Cameo.
That's what I thought the last one was.
Congratulations,
Love
Brody.
Cameo.
Were they all Rare games? No, they weren't. Were they?
No, they weren't.
No.
I think she got a bit... I don't know. Maybe she thinks Immortals
rare
is a Rare
inspired.
Game.
Inspired.
Yeah. No, I just said, what are some games you have fond memories of? And that's what she gave me. So.
Good old Nina.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Good
full
selection
of surprises.
So yeah, we are going to launch an official investigation into the What the Wiki scores.
If anyone
yes,
can help.
I will be looking for the evidence, as they say.
But as I have it here, we've got me on 16, Brody on 15 now, James on 11, Shannon on 7.
I think James is on 13.
If I just keep sneaking in one for the rest of the year, then I'm good.
Yeah.
That's what they all say.
You're staying in the hunt. Yeah. That's it, yeah.
Yep.
But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start Podcast. A nice chunky episode today. I think we're going to comfortably go well over an hour. Subscribe to us on Listener, the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at pressstart.com.au. We've been joined today by Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me on most things at Brody_DG.
Make sure you go and check out Brody's full preview of Tony Hawk Pro Skater 3 and 4 over on the website. Well, you also find James's review of Doom the Dark Ages. Throwing to you there, James.
Sorry. I just realized that I was like glazing Capcom for like a good 10 minutes while I was wearing a Resident Evil shirt. Now I feel self-conscious.
That's why I said, did you know this is coming up?
Oh, yeah. No. Oh, right. I just thought you were just like, how is he so prepared with such a good response? That's what I thought you meant. Yes. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at Jams, @TJAMZ. Oh, I'm also on Blue Sky, if you can find me. It's a fun challenge for the week.
And last but not least, we had Shannon.
Yeah, you can follow me at Shannon Grixie, my mood t-shirt. Big mood day.
Oh yeah, your camera's flipped. I've only just put that together.
Mine that's is hilarious. Too, I think. Are we all flipped?
No, yours is good.
No, yours is really? Coming through fine. Yeah.
On my side, it says
just like, Shannon's. It's like mirrored.
Live Tenezda. Anyway,
I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxbro. We'll be back again next week. But until then, happy gaming.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye. Take care. Bye.